The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast featuring the Crop Doctors.
Good afternoon from the Crop Doctors Podcast studio in Stoneville. Tom and I have Drew and Dave Spencer with us. A lot of you may not know Dave. Some of you may know Dave. If you're in East Mississippi, you may have crossed paths with Dave. We're going to give Dave a chance to introduce himself in a minute. Longtime Stoneville guy, though. Tom, you talk during the intro. Don't talk during the intro.
Sorry, actually.
See, now you're doing inside jokes. You can't do inside jokes on the podcast because nobody knows what you're talking about.
That's all right. People in the studio do. That's acceptable. It gets good looks.
So that's evidently a Drew Golson pet peeve. Who knew Drew had pet peeves? He's such an easygoing guy.
we're gonna give him a complex.
Such a likable guy, and then he has some serious pet peeves.
Did they say something on the podcast
words
that day? Because all of a sudden my phone call numbers have dropped. What happened?
All right, Dave, tell folks who you are, and then I'll spring my question on you.
Again, I'm Dave Spencer. I'm based out of Starkville. I basically have research and extension responsibilities in irrigation and in water quality. And so the way obviously Drew is the state irrigation specialist. And so with me being in Starkville and him being based in Stoneville, it makes sense for me to take more of a lean towards pivot irrigations and overhead irrigation systems. So that's what a lot of my research and extension on the irrigation side is focused on.
Because those are more common in East Mississippi.
Yes. Yep, absolutely. So they're, you know, people are tearing down pivots in the Delta and they're putting them up in the prairie. There are the number of irrigated acres in the prairie is slowly but steadily increasing. So that's what I kind of do on the irrigation side. And then on the water quality side, what that means is looking at a lot of what's being transported off of the row crop fields. So any types of, you know, how much water is leaving these systems, what it's carrying with it, whether that's sediment, nutrients, or other agrochemicals.
So how long have you been in that position?
So I've been in this position since May of 21.
Okay, that's what I thought too. So, and then prior to that, you were in Stoneville for 4 years?
A little over 4 years, yep. Okay. I started my PhD in Stoneville in August of 2016.
Dave's a little unique because he is an engineer, like for real engineer, before he was a irrigation guru.
Recovering engineer. Everybody always throws that, but I do no longer do that.
So, Tom, I considered throwing Dave a math problem for my question, and then I thought, no, I could make myself look foolish. So I backed up on that. I mean, I don't know any high-level math.
I don't know. Me neither.
My question is, we're right in the early stages of mini T-ball. I'm going to ask both of y'all, I'll give you a chance to answer. Your crowning achievement in youth sports, Dave.
My crowning achievement. So I was a youth. How old are we going up for youth?
Well, you crown. That's the top.
As far as you got to go for glory, Dave.
Yeah, well, my peak was not very high. But I guess it was in high school. I played football, and I was not I played tight end. I was a very small tight end, obviously, because I know y'all can't see me, but I'm only like 5'11". I was not very good at catching the ball. So I actually got 2 receptions my senior year. So that was my crowning achievement.
Okay. Drew, I know you got a good one.
Crowning achievement. Yeah, so the peak outside, I guess it's football. You did football. Doesn't have to be T-ball, I guess, or baseball.
Anything you want, man.
Okay.
Drew's glorious moment as a
– I peeled off most sports as I grew up and then honed in on football as I was in high school. So
because you were from Texas, right?
Because I'm from Texas, and that's just all we know. So I was all-state linebacker in high school, but I was tiny. I was a little I got run over quite a bit, but I just seemed to be where I needed to be and tripped up most people. So I guess that was it. My glory days as a linebacker, .170 in high school.
Davey got you.
He did. Oh, yeah, there's no competing with that. I thought he was going to go in a different direction. He said he pivoted away from sports. I didn't know what was going to come next, if he was going to get into modeling or what.
No, pivot away from some.
He was a hand model.
I peaked in baseball real early.
He was a hand model. Hand model.
About five coach pitch is when I realized baseball wasn't it for me.
I was holding out a glimmer of hope that he was going to have like a roping story or something.
I did rope. Fell off my horse. That was when the last time I
that's when your roping career ended.
I got
but
I
you're supposed to get
off.
Back on it and go right back at it.
I think that's the saying, right?
That's what they say, actually.
And I didn't do it.
I think you do that in regular sports, not if you fall off a horse running.
Yeah, that's kind of way off the ground. Yeah, I wouldn't be real happy with that either.
That's a little different, Tom.
No, this wasn't. I didn't get hurt. It was just embarrassing. Like, it was just a slow, boom. Everybody just saw that coming. And I thought about it all the way down. It was a slow slide off of it after. I was like, this isn't it.
Something about those when you got that half a second that feels like 5 seconds, yeah, and you have time to think, huh, this is going to hurt. And then it does.
And then it does.
It's the last week of March, Dave, so it'll be April when we release it. We got a significant amount of rain last night. Irrigation is not really on anybody's radar this afternoon, but it will be in a few weeks. We were going to go through some things that just to think about related to irrigation as the season starts.
Yeah, even though irrigation's not on anybody's mind, I think it should be, because preparing for the irrigation season means that you're going to have much less problems in the irrigation season. I can mention a few things about pivot irrigation systems, and then you can talk about maybe what it looks like, Drew, to prepare for furrow irrigation season. But in pivots, a few of the things that I would say are important to consider this time of year. First, recognize how different pivot systems are than furrow irrigation. They put out a totally different amount of water, much less capacity than furrow irrigation systems. You know, whereas a furrow irrigation system might be able to pump 1,500, 2,000 gallons per minute, maybe a quarter mile pivot can only pump 600 gallons per minute or something like that. And so you've got to take those types of things into consideration when you plan how to apply water to that field and what crops to put on that, things like that. In addition, the lower volume of water that you can apply with a pivot means that there's a lot less margin for error. If something breaks or if you get behind, it's very hard to catch up. So maintenance becomes very important with a pivot irrigation system. You want to do everything you can, particularly this time of the year, to address all of those maintenance issues and make sure that you're minimizing the chances for a breakdown in season. Those are kind of the two big things that I put into those two big categories of how do we know our system and prepare our irrigation plan to fit that system, and how do we maintain it to minimize the chance that we're going to have a disruption in season.
Highlight some of those maintenance points that you're looking at, Dave.
Absolutely. So some of those are things like the tires on your pivot towers. This is the time of year to be going around checking the tire pressure, checking the conditions of those tires, making sure that everything's in good operating order. Check all of your oil levels, grease, pivot points, the tower boxes that are on top of each tower where you've got a lot of the connections. You want to climb up on top of the towers and look inside those, make sure that your connections are tight, make sure that no insects, you know, dirt daubers, whatever, have gotten in there and could cause any sort of trouble later in the year. Similar things with your well motor, your power unit, whatever you've got that, you know, it's just, it's a big piece of equipment that you've got out in the field that costs well over $100,000. And so you want to, and it's a lot of moving parts. So it's just all of the general maintenance that's associated with that. So lubrication, again, making sure that all those connections are tight. And that's on the mechanical side. On the water side, you want to turn the pivot on before you have to irrigate for the first time. You want to check all of your nozzles, because that thing's been sitting out there all winter long. It's gone, you know, it's been beaten on by the sun, the wind, the cold. So those nozzles could have been damaged. If you've got drop down hoses, those could have been damaged. You want to check all of those, make sure you don't have to replace any of them. Check your span gaskets that are at each tower, make sure they're not leaking. Do all your mechanical maintenance, then turn the pivot on and do and let it run and look for any visual problems.
You did say that there's been a pretty substantial increase in acreage over there that's under pivots. What kind of percentage increase are you seeing? Is that pretty much an annual increase, or is that just over 5 years?
It's more over 5 years or a decade-ish. It's, you know, it's not every single year. I'm a steady number of acres coming under pivots, but over the past, you know, 5 to 10 years, there's definitely been an increase. It's not huge. It's not, you know, 50%, but it's somewhere in that probably 5-10%.
5-10% increase.
Yes.
Yeah, I would say definitely a larger number of pivots in that part of the state, and certainly some other things going on. I mean, there's been some drain tile put in some places just on the backside of the Brooksville station. And mm-hmm. I mean, that was a big area they were doing that in too.
Yep.
Yeah, there's different geographies over there, Dave. How productive are the groundwater wells? Because I know there's some surface water that's pumped over there too.
Yes. So it's the groundwater is totally different, obviously, than it is here. It's a lot deeper. So the groundwater wells are typically not sufficient to supply water to a pivot. So a lot of farmers use surface water reservoirs, and that's what they pump out of. And some of them will fill up those reservoirs with groundwater, but obviously once they get it to the surface, then they have enough to...
The pump feeding the pivot is coming from surface water.
Yes.
Are there any guys that tie multiple groundwater wells together like they do in some other parts of the country?
I have not seen that, but I'm not going to say that there's not anyone doing that.
Drew, give us the same rundown on what somebody needs to be concerned about in the Delta from a standpoint of surface irrigation, similar to what Dave talked about.
Before we think about irrigation, I mean, some of the things that we need to make sure we're thinking about are, I mean, it's very similar from the overall mindset is what does the system look like and being prepared for that. And you know, one of the biggest things, I had an agent training yesterday showing agents how to collect flow rates and then took them in and looking at pipe planner. So, I mean, number one, utilize your county extension office to help with what we're about to talk about, but setting up your system. And that's from a plan. I mean, we talk about computerized hole selections being one of the biggest tools to increase our uniformity and help with conservation practices. But also it really helps with looking at what your plan looks like. And so how many sets do you need? What's your rate? And how long is that set going to be irrigated? Do you need to split it out into multiple sets to be more efficient? Looking at that flow rate per furrow, now's the time to tweak all those, not only just setting up computerized hole selection on a field, but looking at what worked last year and what didn't work and tweaking those different irrigation sets, but whether that's based off timing or whether that's based off of breaking up into different sets. And so collecting accurate flow rates is really, really drives that part of it. What is the accurate flow rate? And then looking at and bringing that into pipe planner program so that you can get your system and your whole setup. You can treat it like a sprinkler system as far as how your application and just obviously delivers completely different. But, you know, Dave and I work a lot together, obviously, doing irrigation work. But we do a lot of comparisons on sprinkler and surface irrigation or furrow irrigation applications. And so how you apply that and what that rate applies is going to be completely different. And so understanding before season from a set standpoint and timing standpoint, I think that's very important. So call us, call our group, call the county offices, set up computer house hole selection. But once you have your fields in a setup, I'd say another one is having that plan, whether it's sprinkler or overhead irrigation or furrow irrigation. Not that we need to talk about when to initiate irrigation, but what's going to be your plan on when to determine when to initiate irrigation. And, you know, Dave alluded to some of the aspects of if you don't have much room for error once you start irrigating, because, I mean, we just got through one of our studies from a student that we advised and showed where have direct comparison between sprinkler and furrow irrigation and looking at how you're really hovering around that stress threshold if you irrigate just like you would from a furrow irrigation standpoint. So if you had the same trigger from a furrow irrigation and the same trigger when you're going to initiate irrigation from a sprinkler, obviously soil texture dependent on some of these, but you're really applying, well, not you are actually applying around 3 inches per application. And that depends on that soil texture of how much. It's really hard to say, I'm going to apply this amount on a field from a furrow irrigation standpoint. When you're doing sprinkler irrigation, you're really hovering around. If you wait all the way up to that threshold, you don't knock it all the way back to field capacity like you would a furrow irrigated system, to where you may have that 7 to 10 day time span. You're hovering around that. And so not only that initiation, probably need to start a lot earlier from an overhead sprinkler standpoint. So I think having that mindset, not that they were making that decision, but understanding how they're differently, what's going to trigger. So using, if you're going to use soil moisture sensors, I mean, that's one thing that we really push and talk about helping with that decision, but also just understanding the differences between the two systems and what's going to be your initiation trigger point.
Drew, are you saying that there's or less margin for error with the sprinkler system compared with the furrow system because you are hovering around this threshold of
right
stress?
Yeah, I mean, especially if you treat them the same. I definitely, it's exactly. And so, you can really refill a full profile, recharge it completely with furrow irrigation. You know, obviously some soil types are going to shoot right across and have some issues. But if you dry out your sprinkler and you're not applying, I mean, what's the typical application rate? I know it's a hard question to answer, but what you
there's
see.
A lot of people applying less than an inch.
Yeah,
but we'd really like to see them up around an inch. But to piggyback off that and kind of put some numbers to it, if you've got 440s set up for furrow irrigation and you've got an 1800 gallon per minute well, you know, it might take you maybe 30 hours per field or 5 days or something to spin around, irrigate all 160 acres. Well, if you've got a quarter mile pivot and you've got about a 600 gallon per minute well, it could take 5 days or 4 days to apply 1 inch. So you're applying 1 inch over 4 days with a quarter mile pivot, and you're applying 3 inches over 5 days with a furrow irrigation system. So that's what we're talking about, how hard it is to catch up with a pivot, or how you've got so much less margin for error. Because if it takes that long to apply an inch, that's a long time. That's not, you know, that's...
You're ready to go again by the time, yes, you get all the way around. Absolutely. A lot of cases.
Well, and especially if you look at any data that you got last year, because let's face it, last year was a fairly exceptional year. It was pretty hot, really dry for an extended period of time. Do you think that changed any of the ways that you've looked at the use of either of these irrigation systems?
Absolutely. So really, in my mind, 22 in the prairie was a really, really hot and dry year. We didn't get any rain in June and maybe one shower in July, and that was about it. And so I compare, that's kind of one of my benchmark years, but there were a lot of people that ran out of water because they were using the surface reservoirs and they just absolutely couldn't keep up. So there's that, they ran into that problem of always falling behind because they didn't get any rainfall to supplement. So absolutely, so using them the two systems differently, you have to recognize those potential challenges, and you can't wait and push that soil moisture level lower like you can with a furrow irrigation system. You've got to stay on top of it with a pivot.
You also got to anticipate where that pivot's going to be. I mean, there may be some that you have to water sooner than maybe it needs it in anticipation that it's going to take X number of days to get to another part of the circle that the pivot waters.
Yes, absolutely. And it really all comes down to knowing your pivot irrigation design, what your pivot is designed to apply. And really what we want it to be able to apply is somewhere around 0.3 inches per day. And if you can apply that, then you can typically meet crop water demand for the crops that we grow in the Mid-South. And so again, three tenths a day is, you know, an inch every little over three days. But a lot of pivots are not designed to meet that. And so you do have to, if your pivot's not designed to meet that, it even tightens that margin for error even more. And you really just, you can't afford to let that soil water deplete much at all. You've got to turn it on, because especially with a big pivot that takes a long time to spin around, you've got to keep it running or you're going to be falling behind.
Yeah, I mean, once it goes, well, once you start it, it just going nonstop,
yes,
unless
absolutely.
There's a significant rainfall event.
Yes.
Yeah, I think the last couple of years, the weather that we had showed, or at least unveiled, a lot of the issues that easily gets covered up with scattered rainfall events. That covered up a lot of the issues that you thought you were applying, and you kind of go through a routine. We got behind on a lot of the pivots.
Yes.
When it got hot and dry, that you didn't see show up yield wise whenever you have those routine or occasional rainfall events pop up and kind of level the playing field.
Yep. That's a great point. We didn't realize it, but a lot of these pivots that are under designed that can't meet that 0.3 a day, it gets covered up in years where we get these showers. And so you have no clue until you get a year where it really, you go a long stretch of time without rainfall, especially during peak water demand, and then you can really see it.
So how do you address that, Dave, if you have a underperforming system?
There's a couple of things that you can do. The first thing is to have good agronomics. Like, if you've got a pivot that you know has the potential to not meet crop demand, then in my mind, that would be one of the first fields that I plant, because I'm going to try and get that crop in and take advantage of the early season rainfall. I'm playing the odds. I'm trying to stack the deck in my favor so that I can avoid getting into those windows where my peak water demand is coinciding with the hottest and driest parts of the season. That's one thing. Good agronomics, there's no substitute for that. So being timely with planting, especially in those fields where you might have a water availability issue. Some of the other things that you could do is trying to keep your options open. And I know it takes a good bit of forethought with your herbicide plans and stuff like that, but being able to adjust what crops are going to go under an underperforming pivot. For instance, what I'm thinking about is if you've got a pivot, again, that is underperforming in my mind, maybe you would be comfortable taking the risk planting corn under that pivot up to a certain planting date. You're going to spend a lot of money in nitrogen fertilizer on those acres and other inputs, whereas after a certain planting date, maybe you would rather put a lower input crop under there, like soybean. That's another thing. Just being flexible, being able to kind of change your crop mix to address that. If you grow cotton, planting that under one of those pivots, you know, that's another strategy. And I know that everybody's situation is different, but what I'd like people to do is to think about these things, to think about, okay, if I've got an irrigation system like this, what are some things that I can do on my farm to reduce the amount of risk that I've got associated with not being able to fully meet water demand? Another thing that I've met some growers that have done is planting two different crops under a pivot. And what I mean by that, for instance, if you've got a big pivot that takes 4 days to apply 3/4 of an inch, well, 3/4 of an inch divided by 4 days is less than 0.3 inches a day, right? So if you are trying to irrigate one crop under that pivot, you're going to continually be falling behind. But if you take that pivot and it works out to where you can split it and plant two different crops with separate peak water use, you know, corn on one side, cotton on the other, then, you know, you can all of a sudden, now you've got a pivot that can apply 0.75 inches to half of it to the corn side in 2 days. So you can meet crop water demand. And then when the corn starts slowing down, then the cotton's going to be needing to be watered.
Would the correct term be oscillated, but windshield wiper it back and forth?
You could windshield. See, I don't like windshield wiper, and that's another thing. We can talk about that.
That's your pet peeve?
Well, yeah.
Actually.
Actually, yes, it is. But what I would try to do is maybe irrigate one side, and then I'd walk it through the other side really fast.
Just speed it up.
Just speed it up through that, and then come back. That way you're always watering the driest side, so you're not going back through the wettest side.
Is there anything else we need to cover?
The fact that it rained yesterday and we had Drew today, does that mean it's going to rain tonight? Ooh.
It's not a good start to the year.
Can Dave make it rain like Drew can?
For any of our regular listeners, if you've paid attention to probably the typical banter in the podcast studio or anything that we've said on Twitter or anything that's actually happened meteorologically after Drew has been here, Dave, is it going to rain after this podcast? Because Drew's like 4 for 4.
Yeah, no, I'd put money on it.
Okay.
It's going to be the first week of April. Odds are good. It's going to rain pretty soon. Safe call, Dave.
That's a fair call. It's a good call. I like it. Gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I just kind of ended on that, you know, just this time as we plan. Reach out to us, both of us for sure, but specifically on the, if you're wanting to set up your pot planter and plans, now is a great time to get those flows. We got county agents and our crew that can go out and get it, and we can help set that up. And so instead of doing that as you roll out the pipe, we can help set that up and get our plan set up. So reach out to us, and just want to make sure that's it.
Yeah, we should say we're pretty easy to track down cell phone wise. Google us. You probably will get a cell phone number show up.
Thanks, Dave.
Yep. Thank you all.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is a production of Mississippi State University Extension.